What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Sebastian Scales Show. Been having just a interesting, semi-turbulent couple of days. And it all, I don't know, man, this life is so wavy. You know, one moment you're feeling like I finally figured it out. And then something happens, and then you're just like right back into the mix of the headspace that you thought you had figured out how to not dip into. And first of all, the wildest experience happened to me at the beach the other day. I was walking back from playing frisbee with a couple of friends, and it was like a mile back to my place on the beach, and I was walking, and for some reason, I had my headphones on and I was listening to music. And then after a while, I just kind of turned it off, but I kept my headphones on. And I don't really know why I did that, because it doesn't make sense. Like, it just, for whatever reason, I just turned off the music but didn't take off my headphones. And I had been walking for a while, you know, listening to some Alan Watts, some music, the classics, and then I turned the music off and was just sort of listening to the waves, but like a muted version of the waves. And I had been walking for a while and I was like almost back in my place. And as I was walking, I noticed like just in the corner of my eye, this little girl like walked up right beside me and like started walking with me for a second. And I like was just kind of like, before I could react to it, she goes, "Let's play tic-tac-toe, Sebastian." And I was so confused in that moment, but like, I was like, well, this person must know me, you know? Like, I haven't recognized who this little girl is yet, but she must know me. And so I like looked at her, just sort of expecting to recognize her, and I didn't recognize her. Then I hear this lady a little ways away go, "Annabelle, come back over here." And I like looked up, and it was, I think, her mom or maybe her grandma. She was like, "That's not Sebastian." And I was like, what's happening here? Like, I was so confused because apparently this girl didn't know me, but had just somehow she thought that I was somebody named Sebastian. So she like ran back over to her mom. And in that moment, I like kind of was like, well, maybe I'll just walk on. And then I was like, wait, no, like this is so too bananas to not like say something to the mom at least. So I walked over to the mom and I was like, wait, like my name's Sebastian. And the mom goes, "Oh my God, no way. That's wild. Like, this is Sebastian too." And she pointed at who, I think she was the mom, and I think it was her son and her daughter. So this guy who was like my size, height, age, a lot of things were similar about us. And apparently his name was Sebastian too. And he like had this girl over his shoulder, maybe his girlfriend or maybe his sister, I don't know, but they had been like playing in the water. So I like said hello to him and he said hello to me and we like fist bumped. So I guess Annabelle had just thought that I was her brother and she wanted to play tic-tac-toe. So first of all, like the fact that I wasn't listening to music and was able to hear what this girl said, and for her to have nailed my name for, like, this is one of those experiences where a lot of people would look at this and just be like, that's really unlikely. And I'm like, this is beyond unlikely. The sequence of events that had to happen for this to actually happen were so astronomically unlikely that it seems like it defies math. And for me to not be listening to music, for my name to be Sebastian, for me and the other Sebastian to be so similar in stature and I guess energy that Annabelle thought that I was him. And Sebastian's not a common name. And we had the same name. And for me to be able to hear it, if I had had my music on, I probably just would have kept walking. So many things lined up so perfectly for that experience to happen. So anyway, I talked to Sebastian briefly, and then I started talking to the mom again, and she was like, yeah, welcome to the clan of Sebastians. And I was like, yes, definitely. And I remember like looking at Annabelle, and she was kind of doing that kid thing where she's like smiling, but like not making eye contact. And I had this interesting feeling about this family. They felt familiar. I don't know why, but it felt like I knew them somehow from somewhere or some when. But the mom said something to me after she was like, welcome to the Sebastian clan. I was like, yeah, definitely. And then a part of me was like, oh, I should probably like leave this situation, which I guess is just like my conditioned self being like, don't be weird. Don't make these people think you're weird, you know? And so I was like, oh, well, have a great day, everyone. And the mom looked at me and she was like, take good care. And the way that she said it was so deliberate and intentional. It felt more than a pleasantry. It's hard to explain why it felt so significant. Maybe it was in the context of the synchronicities, like being open to that. That maybe, I don't know. But I don't know if I'd really felt that like connection with a group of strangers before, where it was like, wow, like, it was so trippy. And as I was walking back, I started thinking to myself like, oh, I should have talked to them more. And then I was like, no, that was perfect. The interaction that we had was perfect. I already, part of me was, you know, thinking like, I shouldn't say anything to them in the first place, but it was too cool of a situation. And I had to get some sort of clarity as to what had just happened. So I was walking away and I was thinking about what Annabelle had said prior on that walk back. I had literally been thinking to myself, like, I haven't really seen much magic recently, which is like, what a silly thing. As if all of this isn't magic. As if it's just so normal for us to be human beings walking around. These absolute miracle beings, the culmination of consciousness, of existence, just currently. But I mean that in terms of the things that we talk about on this podcast, like synchronicities. I felt like I hadn't really seen much of like the universal magic in the context of that kind of stuff recently. And sure enough, that's when Annabelle pops up. So it was a combination of that and what she said and what the mom said, but particularly her saying, let's play tic-tac-toe, Sebastian. I felt like that was the universe reminding me through Annabelle that the point of this is to play and to have fun and to enjoy existence. Sometimes these synchronicities, it's funny because I guess it could be entirely, it's all up to interpretation, not just synchronicities, but life. You can interpret it as magic, or you can interpret it as just what it is and that, you know, it's nothing to be excited about. It's entirely up to you. But it's certainly a lot more fun interpreting it in the way of magic. So, yeah, it was really interesting. And I recorded this video after it happened. I went and sat down on the beach before going back into my place. And I recorded the video and just, you know, posted it on TikTok, I think a day later. And there were a bunch of comments, and the comments were either, this is so cool, you know, oh, the universe reminding you to enjoy, and, you know, it's you looking out for yourself and reminding yourself that this is a game. And then there were also comments that were like, you're ridiculous. You're way overthinking this. You're putting way too much arbitrary meaning on this random series of events. And there wasn't really much in between, which I guess is just the nature of commenting. You're not really going to comment on something that you're indifferent about. But it was funny to see the sort of two ends of the spectrum. Magic and mundane. And I don't know. I felt so good after that experience. And the interpretation that I had of the experience. I just was walking around the rest of the day so giddy and just like, oh yeah, like, it's not that serious. And it felt really good. And I felt like there were also a lot of comments of people being like, this is your, like, maybe you in another reality. Maybe that Sebastian is me in another time or another, you know. I don't know. I don't know what to attribute the feelings that I had towards this family to, but it was something, it felt deeper than strangers. And it felt like the familiarity that Annabelle had towards me, I had towards her and her family. And it makes me think that maybe it wasn't just us, me and Sebastian being similar sizes, and maybe it was more like she felt the connection. Because kids feel it maybe the most, because they're not thinking as much in the way that all of us adults are. They're not worrying and stressing in the same ways. They're more present. And I doubt that Annabelle was like, oh, my soul brother, or my brother from another life, or whatever our connection is. But it's certainly beyond concepts and words. And maybe it was just a feeling that she felt. Whatever it was, it felt really good. And yeah, it was just so, wow, I feel really grateful right now to be able to have a place to talk about this and to, you know, be able to talk with you about this. Because I feel like for a lot of my life, I've been around people that view these types of things in the mundane way. And I just feel so much better to interpret it in ways that make you feel good, obviously. So anyway, I was riding that universal high for a while. And then that was Thursday. And then Friday night, I had this show, and a stand-up show. And I had told some of my friends about it. I've always been hesitant to invite people that I know to stand-up shows, partly because if you bomb, then you have to hang out with them after. And that's, it sucks, you know? And then everybody's like, oh, great job. And you're like, no, I know it wasn't good. And it's a lot easier to, if you're going to bomb in front of people that you don't know and never have to see again instead of your roommate. But I've been trying to get over that fear, because what's the plan? To just forever do stand-up anonymously? It's something that I have to do, and I might as well get over now. So I told a couple of friends about it, and there were like 7 friends that came to the show, and I was going to run the molestation material. I was going to do 10 minutes. I came up with some new bits that I thought were great, and it was, I was excited. I was nervous, but I was excited. And it was a show in Hollywood. My friend was putting it on, and there were a couple of big YouTubers on the lineup that I didn't know personally, but I watched their stuff and I was excited to meet them. And I kept it together, you know, like I will often find myself changing the way that I behave when I'm around people that I think I need to impress, you know, as many of us do. But I've become very aware of like the thoughts that pop into my head and the tendencies that I have where I start overthinking instead of just being myself and trusting myself to say something that is authentic in the moment. I will consciously say less things because I'm vetting it. I'm screening what I'm about to say because now I'm around people that I better be funny around. And if I'm not funny around them, then they're going to fight me, blacklist me from YouTube or whatever. So I was sticking with it. You know, I was like, I met one of the guys. I got to the show and I met one of the guys and he was super cool. And we were just chatting, you know, all good. And then there was a moment where it was like they had like this lobby area and then the theater. And in the lobby, everyone was just kind of hanging out before the show. And there was a moment where there were two YouTubers, one really big, you know, influencer guy, and then me. And three of them were sitting down and I was standing. And I realized that I hadn't said anything in like 2 minutes. And I was just standing there and I was like, you got to get the fuck out of this situation, you freak. I felt like they were all just thinking about how weird it was that I was standing there not saying anything. And instead of just sinking into the moment and enjoying being around these people who I admire, I felt like I needed to change myself in order to make this experience acceptable. And partly because it was like, I need to impress these people. And because I don't yet fully feel that I am enough, I feel the need to change myself to a version of myself that my brain thinks is enough and will be respected by these people. And so I started noticing that and kind of just feeling that, and it doesn't feel good, but I'm glad to be aware of it. So I walked away. And I went to the bathroom, didn't have to pee, you know, just went to the bathroom, and the lights didn't work in the bathroom. So I just stood there in silent darkness for a little bit and took a few deep breaths before coming back out and just saying to myself, like, hey, relax, you're good. So then I come back out, you know, my friends are there. There's a, you know, 50 or 60 people in the lobby area. People are starting to file into the seats. And as the show's like getting close to starting, like a couple of like enormous YouTubers show up. These are people that I've been watching for years who I, you know, just I love their content. And I just, that feeling that I had before with the people that I was standing while they were sitting with, it compounded and I was like, oh, wow, now this is an opportunity. This is like, these people are going to, cause they were there to support the YouTubers that I was just talking to, cause they're all friends. But now I'm like, fuck, this is a big opportunity all of a sudden. Instead of performing for my friends and some strangers, now it's like, wow, this could be really monumental, especially because I know the reactions that a lot of people have to the molestation content. Almost every time something cool happens, whether it's during the show or after the show, people have really interesting reactions. And it's gotten to the point now where I'm very comfortable and confident with it, where I can deliver it and I know that it'll work. So, but now, in the same way that I felt like I wasn't enough before, now I'm like, instead of just trusting the material and trusting myself, I'm like, you better put on a performance. I mean, this better crush. And I'm like immediately creating scenarios in my head of what they're going to say to me after the show and what's going to have all these amazing opportunities. Come be in our YouTube videos because we love your stand up, you know, just immediately seeing all of these outcomes that could happen in this experience that would require me to be better than I am normally. Or just, you know, I just started putting so much pressure on myself. And I was talking to one guy, and one of the YouTubers came over, and the three of us were talking, and he was so cool. They were both so cool, so nice. And it was this guy, Ryan. We were just sort of joking, and I was settling into, you know, making jokes and not just being starstruck, but just relaxing a little bit, and it was good. And then the two of them walked away, not because they didn't want to talk with me. I hope, now that I'm saying it, that could have been a possibility. But the conversation ended, and I went and said hello to the other big YouTuber. And I was like, hey, what's up, man? Love your videos. And he was like, oh, okay, cool, thanks. You know, I'm sure I'm the millionth person to say that to him. But my whole demeanor had changed at this point, and I could feel myself as the show began. I was going up fourth, and there was a green room backstage, and I a couple of comics were hanging out back there, and I left the green room to go practice my set outside of, you know, out in the cold, because my heart was beating so fast, and when I get nervous my neck gets red. And so I was trying to calm myself down by breathing, and then also being in the cold makes it easier to bring your heart rate down. So I don't know if that's actually scientifically true, but it felt good because I was so nervous to be in the cold. Anyway, I'm running my set, and I'm going through it, and I'm like, and I know this set already, but because now there's these people are here, I feel like I have to get it down so fucking, there's no room for error now. And if there's one thing I've learned doing stand-up, it's that the more relaxed you are, the better you're going to do. The less rigid a thing is, the more organic and authentic it feels for the audience. So I can already kind of feel this feeling of just needing to be more than I am. And you know, I'm listening to the other comedian sets and thinking, wow, that's a lot of laughter. That's a lot to compete. All of a sudden, these people that I'm performing with become my competition because of the people that are in the audience. Instead of viewing us as a team and a unit, let's go put on the best show possible, it's now me and my ego trying to get something from the experience. So things are off, you know, already. And the guy, my friend who was putting on the show, Austin, does impressions, and he was doing an impression of Joe Biden before I got on stage. So he did Joe Biden's impression, obviously did great. He's a super talented guy. And then he brings me up as Joe Biden, and he calls me Sebastian Scales. And so I leave the green room, go on stage. And as I'm going on stage, I'm in my head, I'm okay, he just fucked up my name, but is that part of the bit because he's Biden and his whole thing was forgetting stuff or getting details wrong? And instead of going with that first thought and feeling and trusting that that would be a funny thing to say, I was nope, stick to the routine, stick to the plan, rigid, bam bam bam, joke. So immediately I went against my gut instinct before I had even said anything on stage. I'm like, nope. And it could have been so good. And I've replayed this fucking moment in my head so many times since Friday. It's Tuesday now. Of, you know, I could have been is that Joe Biden? Was that Austin doing Joe Biden? Or are we just not as good of friends as I thought we were? You know, something like that to lighten the mood. And I realized from this set in particular that it's hard to just dive into child molestation. I've been doing it a long time, but generally starting with something else is a good way to lead into it. But again, because I had this idea in my head of this needs to go this way, I just stuck with the material, which is not always a bad thing, but if you're actively saying to yourself, no, don't do that, that's not going to be funny on stage, chances are that mentality and thought process will trickle into the rest of the performance. So I started with my set, and just started right away with child molestation. And you can kind of get a feel, you know, I've done it long enough now where I have material that works, so I know that the audience will laugh, but it's a question of how long do they laugh for. And with molestation material in particular, it's like, if it's short laughter, it's tough. If it's long laughter, I mean, maybe this is just any material, but the laughs were short. I mean, I would say a punchline and it would be like, ha ha ha, and then silence. And it was just, everything felt off. It was so hot on stage from the lights that I kept like licking my lips because I was convinced that I had shit. Part of it is that I'm growing out this puby mustache. You know, I'm just realizing I'm like, I like lick it a lot, which is like not a great thing to be doing on stage. But I was convinced I was getting like dry mouth, and then the dry mouth was getting like into my mustache. This is what I'm thinking while I'm doing stand-up comedy about getting molested as a kid. It's like kind of a recipe for disaster. This is my head. I'm not in the moment. I'm in my head. My attention is internally. So I'm thinking about how the laughs aren't super long, how I fucked up that. I should have said something different at the beginning. My mouth is too dry. You know, I'm not relaxed. I remember at one point I have this joke about Heelys, which is, you know, pretty consistently one of the biggest laughs of the set. And I hit that final line of the Heelys bit, and the laughter died out fast. And I was like, this is going to be tough. But instead of, you know, saying how I was feeling in the moment, I just continued on. And I felt my own belief in myself crumbling. And I felt like the scenarios that I had imagined in my head were sort of, it's not even that it was a bad set. Like I ended up getting a recording of it after, and the recording was fine. You know, like, yes, the laughter was short, but it wasn't like I bombed. But at the end of the set, I was doing this new bit and I forgot how I was going to end it. And so I was like trying to figure out, I couldn't remember. And instead of being like, oh, I can't remember the name of the, instead of just being real and authentic, I just said nothing. Just as I did when I was standing and those three dudes were sitting. I just said nothing at the end of the set and eventually was like, thank you guys very much. And it was just like it was such a long period of silence between my last joke and the end of the set that made the entire set feel like a bomb. And I was talking to a comic backstage after about how they call it the dismount, and you try to get off of the stage like on a high note. That's generally what people remember, is like the end of the set. And it just was, the note could not have been lower. It was deafening silence. And it made the whole set feel like a wash, especially when I'm already in my head about all these things that were going wrong. I don't even know how I looked. I don't know how people were perceiving me. I don't know what people really thought of the set, but I got off stage and I was back in the green room and I'm like, you know, suppressing a panic attack because all of my friends were there on top of these YouTubers who were now going to create my comedy career, apparently, according to my brain. All of these scenarios that I'd imagined and then attached weight of, you know, career success, self-worth. Like, if I could get in that video, then I would feel okay about myself, which I know is not the case, and I know is not true. Is this too? Well, the lighting's a bit weird, but that's okay. I had attached myself to these outcomes, and now I was convinced that none of them were going to happen, even before anyone had talked to me after the show. I was like, nope, I'm a failure. Immediately, one of my friends who was at the show, he texted me and he was like, crushed it with 2 exclamation marks. Not that the exclamation marks are significant, but I was so grateful to receive that text from him because, like, I remember the producer of the show, like, didn't say anything to me when I got backstage, and I was like, fuck. Because, you know, when you're in a negative headspace, your brain continues to find things that confirm the belief that you're having and the headspace that you're in, and positive as well. That's why it's so important to remain in a positive headspace and focus on things that make you feel good. But in that moment, him not dabbing me up or whatever meant that he thought that I bombed too. My brain's confirming my own belief through this guy who, by the way, is also performing multiple times during this show. He's doing multiple different characters. Who knows if he even listened to my set? He could be freaking out backstage having anxiety too. But my brain's like, nope, that's what he means by that. He hates you now, etc. So I'm texting my friend back and forth like, yeah, dude, I feel like I fucked up the ending. He was like, dude, didn't even notice. And then my brain's like, that's what you would say because you care about me and you want me to feel good. You wouldn't say, yeah, you fucked up the ending. You would. So I'm like, now what's happening is reality is colliding with my mental reality. Reality, my friend, who watched the performance, is saying, great job. My head's like, no, that's not what happened. And I know that for a fact. Therefore, you're just saying this to make me feel better. So I felt like my whole, and this is where anxiety is so wild, because it cuts you off from reality. Your whole mental existence becomes your reality. And if that's a negative thing, if you're thinking negatively, it just spirals. So I was bugging out backstage, and I went out to the lobby area, and there was nobody out there, and I was just kind of sitting there by myself. And then my friend Ryan, who had sent me the text, happened to come out and go to the bathroom. And so he talked to me for a while and was like, dude, like, I explained to him what I was feeling and how, and he, you know, I talk about anxiety and stuff often, and I was talking about, you know, this, I'm freaking out, yada yada yada. And he was like, dude, like, it was a good set, like, I genuinely don't know why you're feeling like this, like, people liked it. People thought you were hilarious. You were hilarious. But my brain just like wasn't having it. And I was like trying to like keep it together because I knew I was going to have to interact with a bunch of people after this show. You know, my friends came out to Hollywood from the west side of LA, which is like an hour drive. I can't just leave the show, you know? But that's what my brain wanted me to do, was just like go home and go to bed. So I didn't do that. He calmed me down a little bit, but I was still for sure freaking out. And I know I was freaking out because I immediately went and grabbed a White Claw. And, you know, I obviously drank some, but I was grabbing that White Claw not out of enjoyment and relaxation. It was, give me something to focus on that's not my thoughts for a moment or something like that. It just felt like I wasn't even tasting the White Claw as I was drinking it. I was just drinking it to be doing a thing or just, yeah, it was trippy. So I went like into the theater for the last couple of sets and watched some of the show, and you know, people were really funny. People did really well. And because I was now in this headspace of me against the world, I felt worse about myself the better other people did, which is, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but what a nightmare of an experience. Instead of feeling good for the people around you, and you know, that's requiring other people to have a shittier existence themselves for me to feel okay, which is not how I want to live my life. But in that headspace, it's hard to snap out of it. So anyway, the show ended. And I was standing outside, and like I said, you know, I get a lot of really interesting interactions with people. I have a lot of really interesting interactions with people after shows like this, and oftentimes people will tell me that they were molested too, or they've been through something similar, or you know, all sorts of different things. And my friends came up to me first, And they were all like, you know, everyone gave me a hug and they were all like, that was so cool, dude. You know, a lot of these people have never seen me perform before. And I turned to Ryan at one point and I was like, I'm convinced that they're all lying. Also, just to clarify, my friend's name was Ryan, but also there was a YouTuber named Ryan. So the Ryan that I'm talking about here is my friend. I feel like they're all lying to make me feel better. So my brain just will not accept reality. And it's crazy because in that moment, it felt like no matter how many people said great job, I was not going to believe them. Even the YouTubers. And one of the guys did come up to me and he was like, hey man, that was a really good set. That was really cool. And I was like, thank you so much, dude. And even then, the people that I had created this expectation around, because I had imagined a scenario where I now get to be in their videos because of this, that them just saying good job was not up to my imagination's standards. So even that felt like a failure. And rather than being open to whatever's happening in reality, my brain's like, unless it's exactly like the audacity to think that I figured out the optimal way for life to go. That's so wild about worrying in our egos, is it's like, no, we think that we know what's best for us and the world, but we have no idea. We never know. And that was why. So there were three main YouTubers. And one of the guys didn't say anything to me after. And I was convinced that was because I had a horrible set and because he hates me now. Standard. The other guy said, great job. You know, I hadn't talked to that guy yet. And this is the guy who I just brought up. And he was like, that was really cool. Awesome. So significant. So meaningful. The third guy, who I had talked to earlier, Ryan, he came up to me at one point and without saying a word, he just gave me a really big hug and then he like kind of ran off. And in that moment, my interpretation of that was he didn't even say anything. Like it felt like he gave you that hug because he felt bad for you. Again, anxiety talking. But it felt like everything that everybody did was a confirmation of what I believed was happening. And it is possible that that's what was going on, but just so crazily unlikely. Maybe people are just telling the truth. Maybe people just actually liked your performance. Maybe the whole world isn't out to get you. But in those moments, it felt like it was. Everyone was. And I had some really meaningful conversations with some people afterwards, not just the YouTubers, but, you know, just people that had been at the show. And I remember one person was like, wow, you were my favorite performer. And I was like, in my head, I was like, there's no way. So there was just instance after instance of my mind just battling reality, trying to confirm my beliefs. For what reason? I don't know. It's like a victim mentality. It's like, no, I know that I'm right about this. And then, you know, I felt like I got into a bit of a paralysis after that, where like a couple of different people were like, hey, do you want to go grab a beer? Do you want to go out? Do you want to come back to this house party? Oh yeah, tough life. You know, a bunch of people wanted to hang out with me after the show and I was like, I don't know what to do. I can't make a decision. Everything that I do is wrong. But it's just how it felt in the moment. I felt like I had anxiety, decision paralysis. And it felt like I couldn't make the right decision. So I got invited to one of the YouTubers' houses after, who was on the show, and I think a lot of those guys were going to be there. And I just decided not to go because I felt like I wasn't being who I am. I felt like I wasn't myself. And I felt like in the same way that I had been performing to try to get an outcome, I would have been going to hang out with them for a reason other than just to have fun. And especially because the show had gone so poorly in my head, I felt like I needed to make even more things happen. And it would have just, I think it probably would have been not a great experience. So I just hung out with some of my friends instead. And, you know, had a little freak out in the car. Two of them calmed me down. And truly, I had not been back in this headspace in a long time. And it's weird to return to it. But I was thinking about it more the next day. Actually, I should say that during the set, I've been doing this thing recently where like I'll ask the audience, like, did anyone else get molested? Because I've had some really interesting interactions like that, and just because it's a fun thing to do in the context of what I'm talking about, to be like, hey, look, it happens, you're not alone, you know, there's lots of us. And nobody had said anything when I asked this during my set, and I felt like that was, of course, turning the attention on me again. I thought that was a product of me not being funny enough or not feeling comfortable enough. It felt like I reverted back into a version of myself like when I was doing stand-up when I was younger, or, you know, a few years ago, where I'm just like frozen on stage and not comfortable and not okay. So I felt like it was a product of that. But I got this message from this person later that night at like 2:30 in the morning, and they were like, I'm not ready to talk about what happened to me yet, but I just want you to know that you give me strength. And I read that coming back from the bar. One of my friends was driving us back. And it helped me step out, because it made me realize that just because nobody said anything in that moment doesn't mean people weren't affected positively and negatively, possibly. But I don't need somebody to say, yes, me too, and then we have this amazing conversation and everybody's blown away while I'm on stage. Again, attaching to an outcome instead of going with the flow of the moment. So it was very serendipitous timing, because I was questioning so much about myself and my life path just because of one set that wasn't even bad. It was just my interpretation of it. And then the next day, so thank you to that person. Yeah, I asked him if I could share, and he said, absolutely. So keeping him anonymous, but thank you to you, my friend. You showed up in a time that I needed strength. And so thank you for that. Again, it's all up to interpretation. Like, I thought more about the interaction that I had with Ryan after the show the next day too. And my inability to let go of the way that I thought things were going to go completely blinded me from the way things went. And because this one big YouTuber didn't say anything to me after the show, that made me unaware of how significant that hug that Ryan gave me was. Like, it almost felt like, in the same way that that person who reached out at like 2:30 in the morning on Instagram and was like, hey, I'm not ready to talk about this, but thank you, you give me strength, that felt like what Ryan was doing in that moment, where it's kind of like, hey, I don't have the words to say this, what is going on with me right now, but that hug was an expression of love. And maybe he hugged me because my set was bad and he felt bad for me and he just wanted me to feel okay. Either way, it was a loving expression that I couldn't tap into the significance of because I was too wrapped up in my own head. And the way I wanted things to go. But in reality, you know, that hug was in many ways more significant than anything anyone could have said. It's different. People say significant things about this stuff all the time, but it just made me really remember how important it is to keep your attention on what's happening. Because for all I know, that could have had the biggest impact of any show that I've ever done on the people that were at the show. And maybe I'll find that out many years down the line, or tomorrow, or never. But if the point of this, especially with the molestation stand-up, is to like help people and myself, you know, as soon as I made it about me and in my own advancements, I lost sight of that. And it made me unable to grasp and observe the magic again. And maybe this big YouTuber who said nothing to me after the show was molested too. And he's like, I don't want to fucking talk to this guy. Or maybe he was, maybe his dad was accused of being a molester or something. There are infinite options, and my brain thinks it knows exactly what happened. Isn't it a wild coincidence that everything that my brain is sure of that's happened is negative? Interesting. And unlikely. So I've been trying to step out of this a little bit the last couple of days, a lot, as much as possible. I think part of it too is that, you know, like my friends who I know and love would not stop loving me even if that whole show, nobody laughed. If I bombed the entire show, they would still be my friend. But I created this I felt like I didn't live up to the expectations that I don't know they had and probably didn't have. And so I felt like I let them down, and I let myself down, and I let my career down, and all of these things that I had no confirmation at any point that this is actually what was going on in the minds of other people. I took my own insecurity and negative perception of an experience and projected it onto the entire audience. And and then ignored everything that was contradictory to what I had convinced myself was going on. And then experience the emotional turmoil of, one, believing that all of this is what was going on, and then two, the resistance to reality. So it was intense. And it's Tuesday now. I mean, Saturday I was freaking out. Sunday I was freaking out. I spent 6 hours walking around on Sunday. Like just walking around with no destination, just attempting to clear my head, and it worked to some extent. But it is nuts to slip back into that anxiety and to remember how debilitating it is and immobilizing. And I felt like I couldn't hang out with people. And then I didn't really have a reason to not hang out with people, which made me stressed about saying no, because I feel like I need to have a reason. You know, it never stops unless you become aware of it and take conscious steps towards letting go of these thoughts. And now looking back on that experience, I'm like, even that is significant. You know, I feel like sometimes anxiety is preparing us. It's like, it's almost like an egoic attempt to keep you in this space that your ego thinks you need to be in order to stay alive. It's like a last ditch attempt to keep you safe when you're inevitably heading in the direction of a more peaceful, harmonious existence. Because that whole show, I could have let go the moment my set ended. And I could have just been with the comedians in the green room. I could have been with the people after the show. I could have been with the YouTubers, my friends, the strangers that I didn't know. I could have been present and existed in this universal moment with those people. And my thoughts kept me out of that. So here I am working through it, attempting to. And, it's just funny to look back on it and think how wrong I may have been. And then when I got the recording and I was like, oh shit, I was really wrong. But then just, instead of then beating myself up about, like, because I beat myself up for a while about not going to the YouTuber's house after, because, you could have gotten it together. You could have pulled it together. Like, just trusting that this is exactly the way things were supposed to go. And I for me, it feels like realizing that, like, hey, I'm not going to keep doing this. I'm not, because in any moment during that night, I could have come back into reality, but I was just unable to, egoically, I guess. And sometimes you need a really intense experience like that to sort of shake you back into reality. And I was walking near the Venice canals. And there was just this moment that I had where it kind of felt like I was tripping. I was sober, but I was moving really slowly, and I just started, my thoughts just stopped for a moment. And it just felt so peaceful. So ideally it wouldn't take 6 hours of walking to get to that point, but I don't know. In the same way that I choose to view the world as magic, I also choose to view every moment as significant. And there were so many lessons that I took away from that anxious experience, including, like, bring a water bottle on stage so you're fucking mouth doesn't dry out, and, like, have more fun. Have more fun on stage. Play. It's a game. Let's play tic-tac-toe, Sebastian. It's not so serious. And instead of, like, focusing on being grateful for the amazing, loving people that I have in my life who came to that show, and the amazing people that put it on, and the people that said all these things to me that were so heartfelt. And, it's up to us. Where do you want to put your attention? And, yeah. See if there was more that I was gonna say. Oh, I forgot about this. Dude, when I was sitting out in the lobby tripping out, I literally envisioned a person in the audience as I was getting off stage turning to their friend and saying, "Thank God that guy's done." Talk about anxious hypotheticals. Like, I just created a imaginary member of society and the human race who watched my show and hated it so much that he turned to his friend and said, "Thank God that guy's done." And just also, of course, assuming that his friend was like, yeah, he sucked. And not like, I thought he was pretty good. Just the ruthless projection of insecurities onto the external world for no reason. If you can think that, you can think people in the audience turning to their friends and being like, that was incredible. But we only focus on the negatives because we think that the negatives are what we need to worry about and spend our time thinking about because we need to survive. And these people who are mad at me for having a bad set are going to harm me somehow after, or at the very least, my ego and image of myself is going to be tainted because these strangers thought that it was bad, even though I don't know that. I have no confirmation of that. And until you have confirmation, it's silly to worry about it. And also, like, thank, just so grateful for my friends, because I talked to two of them after the show when we were driving to the bar, and they calmed me down. And then the next day, I was talking to my roommate and his girlfriend and his brother, and they were all just presenting these incredibly mindful points about the performance, and everyone was just showing up and really helping me through this. And I was getting mad at myself and irritated with myself for the fact that I kept bringing this up. You know, it was like I was creating a problem where there wasn't one, and then causing everybody else's reality to become centered around the problem that I was having, and being like, help me, help me get through this. And then that compounded it. It was like the ego created the problem, and then the ego was trying to think its way out of the problem by asking everybody for, you know, help. Not that you can't ask for help. It's like, of course you need to sometimes, but yeah. These types of situations test us in many ways. They test our ability to remain present and test our ability to really let go of ego. And sometimes you get tested and realize that you know, still got a ways to go. And that's okay. Realizing that having a ways to go just means that you're going to get to a point where you feel even better than you do now. And that it's an opportunity to grow and not something that you need to be upset with yourself about. So, perceptions. How do you view it? How do you view the world? It's all significant. Annabelle, Ryan, my friends, every moment. It's more fun to feel that way, so I'm going to keep doing it. Thank you guys for listening. Lots of love. I know this was a bit of a venty episode, but like I said at the beginning, it's what you're going to get. Unfiltered thoughts. I needed to apply some of that logic during the show. If I had just gone with my gut and said the things that I thought were funny in every moment this weekend, it may have gone better, may not have. But it would have been more relaxing. So, we're getting through it. And we will continue to get through it. See you guys in the next episode. Peace.